Hey yo, what's up everybody? Welcome back to Weebcast, the anime and manga show, the number one anime and manga show on the internet, and welcome back. Hope you've been doing good. Hope you guys been doing well, been treating yourself, been treating others right as well. I'm chilling, got me some tea with me. I'm just grateful, blessed to make it to another Friday, to another weekend. I hope you guys feel the same. We had a long work week, but now let's take some of that energy. Let's breathe in, exhale, let's relax and get ready for another week coming up on Monday. But let's not talk about that. But let's talk about Seven Deadly Sins. And that's what I'm going to be reviewing in today's episode. And this wasn't like a requested episode. No one came to me and said, you know what, Chris, CW, you should review the Seven Deadly Sins. And I wish someone had. I wish you guys would give me, I'm just kidding. But I just thought that this would be a good opportunity to talk about a manga that I used to like a lot. I never loved it, but I liked it quite a bit, especially when I was reading it still weekly. It was a blast for some parts, and some of it was, I don't know, the very opposite of a blast, right? And I thought this was a good opportunity, and especially for people who know me pretty well, they know that I used to like this manga a lot. Especially since it was from the same author and artist who did Kongo Bancho. And you're probably like, what the hell is Kongo Bancho? It was this author who did Seven Deadly Sins, did the previous work, Kongo Bancho. I suggest you read. It's much shorter than Seven Deadly Sins. And I thought it was, and to be honest, after reading them back to back, Kongo Bancho was actually a little bit, it has better humor. The fight scenes are almost as good. There's some fight scenes that are kind of, I feel like I said, it's a shorter manga, so they don't really focus too much, and it's more focused on family, and it has truer values, but that's not what we're talking about. We're not comparing the two mangas in this episode. I'm just going to review Seven Deadly Sins and kind of talk about my feelings on it pretty comprehensively. But before we get into that, today's episode is brought to you by the NBA store. Yes, you know the deal. A new year brings the start of a new NBA season, so suit up with the latest gear to show your support for your favorite team. Look, we may be sidelined from going to the arena, but that does not mean you can't watch your basketball from your couch and your favorite NBA team swag. So we're teaming up with the NBA Podgo to bring our listeners 75% off on select items. I know, you heard that right. Just go to podgo.co/NBA for up to 75% off on select items from the NBA store. The NBA, where amazing happens. All right. What's up? Hey, it's time to look at a manga that at this point finished quite a while ago, right? It's a very long series, though, so the review may be long, and if it is long, this may be split into two parts. So we'll see. And I've been writing this for a little bit now, and so I'm excited to do this review. And mainly because this is one of those titles like Fairy Tale, and it's a little tragic. It has a decently good climax and a lot of hype moments. You know, if that's all you want in a manga, then, you know, more power to you, right? But unfortunately, it's held back some of this, the fan service issues, and not just because it is fan service, because the fan service that is in it just isn't all that funny or good. And those issues kind of prevented it from being a bigger thing than what it was. It's a manga that I will have fond memories of, though. even if it couldn't live up to its full potential. But let's just jump into it, because the series starts off with Elizabeth searching for help, and the knights have become corrupt, and the only ones that she can turn to are the seven deadly sins. And despite the name that they used, they used to be Britain's finest warriors. But unfortunately, the group had split apart, and they're all wanted for capital crimes. So she runs into Meliodas, who, now runs a humble tavern, and he agrees to help her. While the guy is incredibly sketchy, but, Elizabeth figures she will need his help. So the first arc is mainly about gathering the seven members to stop the knights and bring Britain to peace once more. And this won't be an easy task, but if anyone can pull it off, it is Meliodas and his merry, jolly crew. And then the second main arc kind of involves the return of the Ten Commandments. And these guys are some of the deadliest villains to ever walk the planet. They also seem to have some kind of ties to Meliodas. And the sins are strong. But all of them are weaker than the weakest commandment at this point. And it adds a really nice sense of danger to the whole mix. Since all the heroes all have to get massively stronger. And it's pretty cool because, the series started on the premise that the heroes were the strongest people around, and now you're throwing in villains who are way more powerful than them. So, needless to say, the series power levels start to get pretty insane the more the series goes on. And then finally, we get involved with the Holy War. The angels return to slay the demons, and the only problem is that they appear to be just as evil, just as corrupt as the monsters they are intended to fight. And this kind of forces Meliodas and the others to wonder, who the hell do I ally with, right? Meliodas has to come to terms with his demonic past as everyone is trying to bid for control over him. The Demon King even shows up for a pretty intense final battle that also became a bit of a running gag among the fans. But let me tell you, reading this weekly was a blast because of that, though. I remember used to read comments on social media and on Reddit whenever there was a new chapter, and it was just hilarious. And I would never miss a beat because it was just too funny. So, but let's rewind. Let's take a step back and talk about the series as a whole. So, for starters, the art is pretty excellent, right? It's one of the cleanest mangas that you might ever read. And I would consider it to be pretty close to top tier in that respect, to be honest. You can really follow along with the fight scenes, and the character designs are pretty much on point as well. And this makes for a pretty good mix at all times. Solid artwork is, half the battle. And after all, it helps you get across the epic scenes a lot better than it possibly could if the art wasn't all that appealing, And the series is also quite long, with a good amount of replay value and plots to kind of keep you interested. Along with the character cast is quite strong, with a lot of solid villains. In this case, I'll talk about the characters a little more in depth later on in the review, but the fight scenes are particularly intense, and the series is, I guess, pretty much known for them. And if I had to pick my favorite fight in the series might have been the Meliodas versus all Ten Commandments. And there's one also fight early on which takes the whole group for a spin, which was pretty neat as well. He also came so close to winning that it just cemented him as being the fiercest fighter in the group. Unlike many titles where they try to keep the main character quite balanced at first, somewhat, Meliodas always had, always was head and shoulders above the other members of the team. And he consistently shows why he is pretty much the leader, and it all makes sense. But now where the series kind of goes wrong in my taste is the fan service. It's unfortunate because it mainly stops after arc 1, And it's something that would occur less and less frequently as the series went on. Depending on the scale of the score, wouldn't have been totally crippled. But as with violence, just like violence, fan service has tiers to it, all right? There's levels to this. You know, quick camera angles and unfortunate tripping is one thing. But Meliodas tends to get pretty physical with Elizabeth, which is kind of the real problem for me here. It's played off as comedy and just, you know, comedy plot, but which I could never really fully invest in. And I could never believe the series would even attempt to do. You know, she never really gives him any kind of consent. And always kind of gets embarrassed by his advances. He just pays just absolutely no mind to this. And it would be a far darker plot if taken any seriously. But and when we learn some twists, you know, down the road that they're supposed to make, you know, kind of make this better. But basically, they are destined to be together. And Meliodas has been together with many different versions of Elizabeth. So he's kind of skipping the formalities and just kind of getting into the action, and since he considers them to be a couple already. But that's just not how it works, though. And those scenes are really rough to get past. And eventually, they do get together, but by then the damage in the series is a little bit already done there. Ban's romance with Elaine is also pretty bad. The series tries to make it more wholesome by the end, but by that time, it's just too late and not enough, and it doesn't really work. I'll take that over the Meliodas stuff, though, but regardless, that's what holds this series back. The series is long, and the plot doesn't occur all that often, but I still can't overlook it. And it's something the series chose to do, and now must live with the consequences and the score. The series still does a good job fleshing out some of the world and the characters within it, though. You know, we learn a lot about Britain, and it's fun how the series uses actual characters from legends like King Arthur and such. And it sets up the sequel series, which is, you know, coming up pretty soon. I'm not sure if the first chapter of the sequel series, I think it dropped. The first chapter of the sequel series did drop not too long ago. And I can't wait. I will eventually talk about it, so don't worry about it. And the series also had a pretty good job messing with the readers during the ending. So, you know, it pretended to be ending and then threw in a few extra fights, you know, just for good measure. And part of the reason why it worked so well is because that now there was no way to know when it would end. You know, if anything, I was expecting the light god to show up, but sadly, she never did. Now, there's a character who's been getting a lot of hype, but has yet to do anything, really. And I expect her to get a pretty big role in the sequel to make up for this, but Seven Deadly Sins also keeps up the intensity with each volume. You know, it's never really a dull moment. I'd say it rivals Fairy Tail on how enjoyable each volume can be. You know, it's certainly at a higher, I was gonna say it's at a higher level than Toriko as an example. But I think Toriko had a better climax, if that makes sense to everybody. And it's tough because most Shonen Jump titles like to end with a huge climax. And it makes sense, you know, because there's a good way to ensure that your journey was worth it. You didn't read all those volumes for nothing. And a series should always have a very climactic finale, and that's what the series was definitely trying to go for. But let's look at some of the characters here. I kind of look at, well, I guess we should start with Meliodas, right? You know what I mean? Who's the leader of the group. You know, he's one of those guys who is so powerful that he has a hard time taking anything seriously. And at times, it's kind of end up being pretty risky for him because, you know, he can lose before he has a chance to go all out. And as a hero, he's only okay, you know? His whole plot with Elizabeth kind of holds the character back. And he can be pretty mean to Hawks the whole time. And I actually liked him best when he was in his dark mode, when he was uber serious. Not the part where he was being mind controlled, but the dark of his own control. You know, the scene of him walking into the base and taking down Esterosa and Zeldris was chef's kiss, masterful. Again, Seven Deadly Sins really knows how to pile on the hype and really take everything to the next level. And you're just guaranteed to see some big stuff in each adventure here. And then you have Diane, who is unfortunately known as the weakest member of the Sins. You know, technically Gowther would be far weaker physically, but she has a number of hacks at the ready. You know, Diane is a pure physical fighter. She can manipulate the earth, helps her evade attacks, as well amp up her abilities. She's a bit of a tragic character, as she likes Melodas, but doesn't really stand a chance from the start. She's a fun fighter to have on the group, though. I feel like she should have gotten another power-up, though. But, you know, I think it would have helped to balance things out with her and the rest of the group. Next is Ban, who serves the role as the rival in this manga. And he isn't nearly as solid as most rivals in shonen battle titles. But what holds him back is that he can be a little too crazy at the whole time. And it just feels, fake. Just over the top, a little too much. And he's always trying to murder Meliodas. And doesn't really seem heroic the way the others are. But his whole regeneration thing is pretty cool. And I'll miss that one, probably. If anything, he feels a little weaker when he doesn't use that ability towards the end of the series, though. Because, you know, he is technically more powerful. And sometimes you really just need to try and stick to your classic abilities to stay at your best, you know? King, though. King isn't really much better. And now you see why I consider the villains to be the main strength of the cast here. I mean, King's true form is pretty bad, so he uses a made-up one. I like his fighting style, though, as he zips around at super speed, and his projectiles, you know, definitely mean some serious business. It's hard to get past his defenses and all, and he gets a lot of development. But for the most part, I couldn't take his character seriously as well. His final form is pretty neat, though, and that was definitely a solid upgrade for the character, no doubt. And then we have Gowther, right, who has a complicated backstory. There's a lot of twists and turns related to this character, and you can also throw some betrayal in there as well. They're okay, but half the time they kind of end up making things a lot tougher for the heroes. They rarely seem to contribute quite as much in a battle sense, and I ended up growing tired of Gowther pretty quick. If you want a solid character who's unpredictable, that's Merlin's job, all right? Now, Gowther is a great member of the team. Their abilities are basically absolute and has a plan for just about anything. Next to Meliodas, they're probably the strongest member of the group, in my opinion. Their barriers are incredibly durable, and they have appears to have a spell for almost any possible contingency here. And as a result, you really can't catch Gowther off guard. The ending to Gowther's arc feels a bit forced, but overall, I thought Gowther was a pretty fun character. I dare say that Gowther ended out as one of the best heroes in the group. Now, that's there for a hot take. But we got Escanor as one of the Deadly Sins, and his character is built like the damn Hulk and Bruce Banner, And by night, he's a meat guy, can't fight for beans. He's scrawny as they come and will run from a fight. But during the day, he becomes more of a Superman-type persona, absolute confidence. The brighter the sun, the stronger he gets. And at his best, he was able to give Meliodas a pretty damn good fight. You know, Escanor is a definitely fun character. His character's end was also pretty forced, considering that the heroes were absolutely wrecking the villain before he decided to use a forbidden move. Still, he does like to show off, so this was his chance to outshine everyone once more. And he's always brought the hype with him. With his fight with Estorosa was, you know, definitely a blast. Elizabeth, though, is kind of the main heroine of the series, and she definitely gets to appear a lot. You know, she doesn't really tend to the fight most of the series, although towards the end she got a new title that was meant to evoke fear into everyone. But for the most part, nobody took it very seriously, even since after all of that, she didn't really do much. But it was a cool thought. I do like her angel mode, and she does get a big power boost from that. And it's just really good to see her being a little bit more assertive since prior to getting her memories back. I also found her to be just a bit passive. Not saying the passive characters are bad or anything, but I felt like her passiveness was taken to another degree. She shouldn't have been putting up with Melodas' antics all that much. Hawks, though. I do want to talk a little bit about Hawks. Hawks is pretty much the main comic relief character of the series. And I'd say that he does a pretty good job in that role. You know, he knows how to turn. He knows how to help run a tavern quite well. And does help out on occasion. He never really gets any respect, but deep down, they're all good friends. That said, Hawks is only good in those short doses, though. And as a main character, he really can't hold his own. You know, not the way that Arthur could. You know, King Arthur is one of those characters who would expect to look amazing here, but surprisingly, he doesn't do a great deal. You know, he finally starts to unlock more of his power, and at the end of the series, but it's more of a tease than anything. That said, you know, he quickly became one of my favorite characters in the series. He's certainly one of my favorite hero. And the guy tries really hard and is always earnest in his attempts to learn more. You know, I fully expect he will continue to improve. I kind of want to talk about Dreyfus. Because he's one of the original villains. And I remember him being pretty fun. It can be easy to mix him and Hendrickson up a bit, though. Ultimately, I prefer Dreyfus, as he seemed to have more willpower to me and was more powerful. Hendrickson tended to get in the way and was a virtual hostage at times. You know, that doesn't really help his case, you know, much at all. Gilthunder was another early villain. Part of the why I remember him so well is the famous lightning throw scene. Milliardos was able to catch a throw that went across whole town. So even Gilthunder was taken to school when... it was just pretty hype scene for sure. Gulia was a fun villain. I feel like she ultimately didn't live up to her own hype, but it was nice that she got some closure to her story, even if it had a bit of redemption arc going for her. Chandler and Cusack were some powerful demons, which makes sense because, you know, they were mentors of Zeldris and Meliodas. I remember being surprised when they showed up, since it was pretty last second, but right away they showed why they were to be feared. They aren't meant to be very liked well villains, you know, but I liked their designs, and they were loyal to their masters. You know, Chandler could be a bit shady since he wanted to murder Elizabeth, but at least he was rooting on Meliodas to take down Zeldris. It's also a bit funny that their power levels apparently even surpassed that of those two. But, you know, the Demon King. I should talk about something about the Demon King. He is the big villain of the series, as you would expect. He steals a lot of the bodies and fights the heroes in a variety of different ways. Never have I seen a main villain get quite so mocked chapter after chapter. It's definitely a different approach, much like the series as a whole. Typically, you would expect the big boss to be cleaning shop, and the heroes barely managing to defeat him after a whole lot of friendship speeches and shit like that. Not with this fight, though. The heroes were completely wrecking him from the very beginning. If anything, they weren't even taking him seriously as they chatted while beating his ass. The Demon King begged for his life on multiple occasions, and people were just losing respect for the guy left and right, left and right. I still like him, though. He may not have been supremely powerful, but at least he talked tough and was pretty manipulative. You know, you can't get much better than that. There's a few other characters I want to get into, like Derrier or Diriere. I don't know. You know what I'm talking about. She has a cool power. Every hit increases the gravity against you, and it stacks as well. That makes a pretty dangerous combo, I feel like. She kind of reminded me of Caulifla from Dragon Ball Z Super. She enjoys a good battle. And she may not be the strongest member of the Seven, but I found her to be one of the more enjoyable ones, to be honest. Typically, she would team up with Monspeet, who had some pretty good abilities himself involving changing places. And honestly, he was doing all right for himself in that fight. In his fight, I mean. And Dettori ended up holding him back to an extent, but it was still a worthy effort. And he also seemed to be not as quite as evil as the rest, and he was willing to, you know, live a quiet life from where, away from all the violence. He didn't quite manage to get that wish, though. But Droll, on the other hand, is another villain who was in a partnership. He tended to work pretty well with Gloxinia. They really didn't get much character development as the other members, though, but they got to be in the flashback arc, which kind of helped. And you know, they weren't bad. You know, in general, I wouldn't say that any member of the Ten Commandments are bad to say. I mean, these two were less memorable, and Galand was one of the best members, though. You know, for starters, he had a great design, you know. And he was also the first member to attack the hero, so we get to see what he can do right off the bat. He really reminded me of Berserker from Fate Zero. Only this guy talked a lot more. Unfortunately, this did mean he would end up being the weakest member of the group, but you still can't forget his memorable entrance. So, Estorosa, though, gets a massive, massive role. And it's hard to forget him taking out Meliodas in one hit. I mean, that's definitely an intense way to make a debut in a series like this, you know? And he's easily one of the more powerful villains, and he gets several super forms in his development. He also has some twists involving Mael of the Archangels as well. It was pretty interesting. You know, I like Estorosa for a while, but once he became obsessed with Elizabeth, he did drop down for me quite a bit. Meanwhile, Mael was reasonably fun. Although he definitely didn't seem very heroic. You know, not surprising considering the Archangels were so damn extreme. Though we do have Zeldris, who is one of my favorite characters in the entire series. His wind abilities are impressive, as they were able to keep the whole cast at bay. You know, while he isn't as strong as Meliodas, but he does keep their battles close, and he does keep improving on his own terms, you know. He is on the side of the villains, but at least he has a good reason for doing so. You know, he wants to bring back Gelda back to life, and since the heroes won't help this, he was forced to turn back to the villains, you know. And he's willing to do whatever it takes to bring her back, even if it means stopping the heroes. And I always like a character motivation like that, and Zeldris was a lot of fun. Finally, I do want to talk about Ludusiel, who's the leader of the angel unit. You know, he was a pretty powerful guy, but also a very corrupt one, who isn't above sacrificing a bunch of humans to get his way. And he's not really the kind of guy that you would have on your squad. He may get you the win, but it will come at a tremendous cost. You know, after a while, the cost of victory is too high, and it's simply just not worth it. I did like having another faction, though. I thought of adding that faction into the series was pretty pivotal. I'm also a fan, and I'm always a fan of having more than two groups because it makes it pretty for exciting battles here. Overall, Seven Deadly Sins had a lot of adventures, in which is why this review was pretty long. So I'm sorry for that. It's a series that you will definitely get quite invested in as you read through it, though. Without the whole Meliodas stuff, this would be probably an easy 7. Unfortunately, it is present. And if you think you can get past the whole plot, then I definitely recommend this series. It's got a lot of action and a lot of hype scenes, so there's definitely reason to skip out on it. There's definitely no reason to skip out it, I'm sorry. You know, each arc starts off strong and with a bang, and the art, it's got some good quality. It'll definitely help you prepare for the sequel, like I said, already has one or two chapters out right now. And once it does, I'm definitely expecting some big things because I definitely want to review it. I definitely want to take a look at it and see how it's going to do. If you aren't able to get past the iffy stuff, then I recommend checking Black Clover out as well. If you like Seven Deadly Sins, I'm trying to think of another series that reminds me pretty close of is Black Clover, which I think is probably a little bit better than this. Not a little bit, probably a lot better, but that's all for me. And wait, no. We got to give the official Weebcast score. And I think this is going to be a weak to mid 4 out of 10 for me. And like I said, I gave you the reasons why, but it's going to be about a weak 4 out of 10 on this series. But that's my Seven Deadly Sins manga review. Thank you for showing up, showing out. I do appreciate it. Make sure you hit me up. Tell me what you think about this episode on Instagram, which is WeebcastTV. You can tell me about the show, tell about this show or the previous shows that I've, previous episodes that I've done on Twitter, which is BasedSenpai. And if you see me on Reddit, on the JXN MORI, make sure to leave a comment when I post up there as well. And also the Patreon. If you like to support the show, there's a lot of ways you can support the show. Like I said, you can keep listening to the show, sharing the show with your friends and family, people who are, and other people who are interested in hearing detailed anime reviews and discussion. Then definitely share the show around. Secondly, you can also support the show monetarily through the Patreon that we have set up for the show at patreon.com/weebcastshow, where we have three tiers, a $1 tier, a $2 tier, and a $3 tier. And you can choose those tiers to get episodes early. You get to hear bonus episodes. You can get on live shows with me. You can offer topics, be the first one to offer topics, and so much more. And another way you can support the show is through Anchor. You don't even have to have an Anchor account or the app. You don't even need any of that. All you have to do is in the description with my Twitter link, my Patreon link, the Instagram link at the very bottom. It should say support this show. Hit that little Anchor link. It should be anchor.support/somethingweebcast or something like that. But it'll be probably the last link in the show description. Hit that link and then you can just directly donate to the show just like that. Like I think it has a dollar option, $5 option, and a $10 option. I think you can do custom as well, but that way you can support the show as well with just direct monetary donation. And like I said, any of those ways that you support the show, whether sharing, donating, and getting closer to the show with Patreon or through the Anchor donating thing, I still love you guys. Thank you for just listening to the show. You make my day, you make my week, you make my weekend, you make me happy. Trust me, when you guys listen to the show, and especially when you give me feedback, that's probably the best thing in the world. Especially when you give me feedback, I feel so motivated, because then I take that feedback and I try to work on it to my damnedest to get it worked, get it done. So thank you so much. Like I said, this is the end of the show. This has been Weebcast Reviews, Seven Deadly Sins, the manga. I'll see you guys next week. And because I hope you'll be ready for next week, because I think coming up this weekend, Sunday, is going to be Valentine's Day. So the next week's episode, I will be doing a little lovey-dovey Weebcast episode to celebrate Valentine's Day. But I'm not going to reveal any details. I'm going to try to keep it on a low key, low key. But thank you for allowing my voice into your ears, into your homes. This has been your boy, C-Dub, a.k.a. Chris, a.k.a. Mori, a.k.a. The Independent Variable, a.k.a. he's about to make himself another pot of hot tea. I'll see you next week. I'm out of 3000. Goodbye.